Welcome back, everyone. It's another episode of Inside Boxing presented by PPV.com in association with Uncrowned Yahoo Sports. I'm Dan Canobio. He's the champ, Chris Algieri, boxing and kickboxing, which will be a big part of today's show. We just watched Alexander Usyk stop Rico Verhoeven in the 11th round, a controversial stoppage because this is boxing. We can't have anything be clean. We can't have anything be nice. How are you, Chris? Did you watch that? Did you watch it?
This is why we can't have nice things, Dan. Because boxing loves to shoot itself in the foot. We're giving itself black eyes. That's what boxing does. Did it again yesterday, but what are you gonna do? And yes, I did watch it. I didn't watch it live. I was working for Pro Box, but I caught the last five rounds last night in between shows, and then I rewatched the entire event this morning. So I'm raring to go. I got a lot of takes, a lot of technical analysis.
There are so many takes.
My walkout song was "Don't Sweat the Technique" for a reason, man. I sweat the technique. So
I love that because you bring that side of the game to this podcast with the technique. The takes on Twitter I'm seeing are just out of control when it comes to this fight, Usyk, where boxing stands, MMA versus boxing, kickboxing versus boxing. It's crazy because when a fight ends like that, a fight of that stature ends how it did, there's going to generate a lot of buzz. That's great because everyone's talking about the sport, but it's always the same thing. Like, we're not talking about an amazing night. We're not talking about an unbelievable venue, which was the Pyramids, which looked awesome. We're talking about more boxing is going to boxing. It's going to shoot itself in the foot, but this, that, and the other. But I want to start the show off by saying, first and foremost, major props to Rico Verhoeven. No one had him doing what he did in that fight. He pushed Usyk back. He had a perfect game plan, him and Peter Fury. He took big shots. He landed big shots. Good for him. Unreal game plan, first and foremost. Second, Usyk looked bad. He came in a career high, 233 pounds. His footwork was off. Whether he didn't train hard, whether he got old overnight or both, Usyk had a bad night. But he still has that clutch gene, Chris. He still was able to turn it on in the 11th round, drop Verhoeven badly. And if it went to the 12th, he probably would have stopped him. Which brings me to my last point of this, of my initial thoughts here, is we were robbed of so many different outcomes. We were robbed of a potential Usyk definitive knockout, which would have been amazing. And most importantly, we were potentially robbed of Rico Verhoeven painting one of the greatest upsets in the history of sports. Because if he would have went the distance, who knows what would have happened here. So we're left with the whole boxing's going to boxing. Is it corrupt? Did the referee, was he told what to do? It was just an unfortunate series of events. But once again, this is just the sport that we love.
Yes, Rico is the man. He made kickboxing look good. That's my sport where I originally came from. Rico's my guy. Man, no one expected that. I didn't expect that. Even though I love Rico, and I think he's a GOAT, and he is the GOAT in heavyweight kickboxing. But yeah, I mean, listen, he really showed out. But to your point, because I was, you know, when you're watching it during, when it's live, the sensationalism of everything creeps into your rational thought and your perceptions, which I think we saw a lot of that even on the broadcast. But yeah, Rico is the absolute man. He deserves all the credit in the world. He came in fantastic shape. He had a good game plan. Listen, the guy was locked in and ready throughout. And to go into your second pro fight and second pro boxing match against the GOAT of boxing, a living legend, and to go from fighting five rounders to 12, I mean, all the credit in the world. And also just the way he handled himself all week and afterwards. I mean, just an absolute spokesman for sporting. I mean, absolute legend in the ring, absolute legend outside of the ring. That's the kind of guy, like, if you're raising kids, you're like, that's what you want your kids to be like. That's who you want them to look up to, because the man is just all class.
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, even afterwards, he could have jumped up and down. He could have been knocking people out in the ring because he was a big moment was taken away from him.
Martial artists are different, man. We came up a different way. And I heard Sergio Mora talking about seeing both the fighters all week. And he's like, yeah, Usyk is an intimidating, scary-looking guy. He looks like a fighter when he's not smiling. You just look at him, you're like, okay, that's a serious guy. He's like, and then Rico, he was like, he obviously looks like an athlete. He's a big man, but like, he's got a different presence to him. He's like, Sergio even said he doesn't look like a fighter. I think he looks like a fighter, but it's just a little different. When you come from a martial arts background, the level of respect and the way you carry yourself is very, very different. You know, I came from that as well. I think a lot of people probably could notice that during my career, because it's just, there's a different level of respect when you come up in martial arts gyms, when you come up through kickboxing. It's just it's a different culture.
Yeah, 100%. There's more pride and all that. I think Rico made a lot of fans.
Yeah.
On Saturday
rightfully
night.
Rightfully so.
Just to rewind a little bit, I know everyone has probably watched the fight or seen it by now, but we're still gonna go through it. Verhoeven comes out real hot. He's pumping that jab. He's pushing Usyk back. I noticed Usyk, you know, he's 233 pounds, career high. They had to wear shirts during the weigh-in. I don't know what that is about. Is that an Egyptian thing? I would have maybe saw that on Friday. I don't know.
He looked fleshy in the midsection. No question about it. No question.
Right when he got in the ring and that shirt was off and his Emperor gear was off, I was like, damn, I know 233, that's his career high. I was like, all right, but what is it, a 233, like muscle? Is it like, no, it was.
Was it purposeful? Did he gain the weight because Rico was big? Rico's a big guy. So.
Right. And then revisionist history, we're going to say, no, he was fleshy and this is why he looked the way he did. Okay. So Verhoeven comes out and he's pumping the jab and he's looking great and he's. Smothering Usyk. He's pushing Usyk back on his back foot. We haven't seen that in a long time. Usually we see these guys play the feint game with Usyk, the hand-to-hand combat with Usyk. He was bringing a different approach to it, and he's won the first round, won the second round, starting to build up a case here. I didn't have it as wide as Coppinger did. I didn't have it as wide as some of on boxing Twitter did. I think, once again, when you see a guy that's a massive underdog looking better than he should, you start to rack up rounds. Like, I didn't have it
overperforming when the expectation is not what is happening. It's very easy to give a guy rounds. I totally agree.
Yeah, so like I think heading into the 11th, I said I had Rico maybe up by two rounds. The open scoring had it even. WBC all of a sudden is going to do open scoring. 76-76, no. Even heading into the 11th round, no. I think Verhoeven had a slight edge, but not some runaway thing like Coppinger had or some runaway thing that we saw on boxing Twitter. Then the 11th round comes, and Usyk finds it like he usually does in these late rounds. And he goes in, he lands a massive series of shots, an uppercut. Right-hand uppercut that drops Verhoeven almost through the ropes. But he gets up, Rico, and he looks somewhat okay. He doesn't look completely out. Mouthpiece out. Saves him some more time. As he's walking over to get the mouthpiece in, he is on really bad legs. He looks bad. Final 10 seconds. Flurry from Usyk. They stop the fight after the bell. And I know the referee is not supposed to take into account how much time is left in a round. We've seen that Richard Steele, Meldrick Taylor. One of the most infamous stoppages ever. He has said, you can't take into account how much time. You just have to say, if a fighter lands a shot at the end of the fight, you know, it could kill them, it could hurt them. I just have to look out for fighter safety. I guess that's what the referee was looking at. I don't know. But he stops the fight after the bell, which is crazy. And the fight over. Would Usyk have stopped him in the 12th? It was looking that way. But I thought Verhoeven, and I think you would agree, had every right to go out on his shield and maybe see that 12th round.
But and that's controversy. He said that. Rico's a warrior. And listen, I'll say this too, coming from kickboxing. Kickboxers get knocked out. Like a lot of heavyweight, that's why Rico is so incredible, because being undefeated for 11 years. Heavyweight kickboxing, those guys knocked each other out all the time. Those K1 guys, like it was back and forth. They go out on their shield and they want to. And Rico was robbed of that. Or like you said, the other options that could have, the other outcomes that could have come from this fight. Cause you don't know, you can't just be like, oh, he was going to stop in the next round. You don't know that. You can't say that. Yes. Was he on his way? Was he hurt? Yes. Was he building a really strong case, that Usyk had figured him out? Yes. I actually think the end came at the end of round 10, when Usyk finally put some numbers together and you could see Rico, you know, he had a little knot growing on his cheek from one of those left hands and he looked tired. The gas tank was dwindling in those last rounds. Those 8, 9, and then 10 is where Usyk, you know, powered through. But 11, Rico was having a pretty decent round. He was handling it. He was avoiding the big shots. But at the very end of that round, that uppercut that Usyk was looking for all night long finally lands. Mouthpiece flies out, goes down. Ultimately, bad stoppage. Bad stoppage. That fight should have gone on. He should have been given the grace to continue fighting, to go to his corner, try to reset, and go out there in the 12th round of fight. Now, in terms of what was happening score-wise, I had Rico up 6-5.
Fair. It ended in the 11th.
So I gave Rico six rounds. Six, 4. And then that round would have made it actually even because of the knockdown. It would have been, it would have been 6-5 with the knockdown. So we would have had an even score. But yes, I had Rico ahead. I had Rico winning six rounds, which means he was in draw territory, potentially getting, if he wins the 12th round, he wins the fight. But, that it was impressive for him to knock six rounds down and put them in the books, because first three, he looked really good. The third was a little close, but I gave him the third. I gave him 1-3. Fourth, Usyk looked like he started to come on. It looked like the beginning of the end right there. And then Rico regrouped and changed his style up. You know, he is two things about Rico. One, he's a great athlete. No question. You got a guy who is as big as he is, who has a gas tank that he has, comes in fantastic shape. But two, he had a really good game plan. And this is something I didn't really see anybody talk about. He actually fought like a little man. He crouched. He didn't give a lot of area to hit. He kept his head moving the entire time. He had that TikTok style. He had kind of an awkward movement. He was rotating those hands a lot, but his reactions were good. Even though those hands were opening, you could kind of read that he would catch things. He wasn't getting hit super clean, especially early on. And the real difference, what really gave Usyk the issue, was his offbeat rhythm. Whenever Usyk's a rhythm fighter, once he finds his rhythm, he's a nightmare. And he just bing, 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 bing. We've seen him do that to all these heavyweights. And especially when it gets later, as the guys start to slow down. And that was really what happened here. Rico had a good game plan. He was pop-shotting. He was landing the counter right hands. Whenever Usyk got any kind of rhythm, he smothers, grabs him, pushes him, uses that physical side, push him against the ropes, lean on him, slap with both hands, keep the hands moving. Very, very smart tactic. Fought like a little man on the outside, fought like a big man on the inside. Beautiful, beautiful game plan. Strategically, so super smart. And it almost worked. But for me, I think it was the conditioning. Going 12 is like nothing else in the world. And, you know, he's got all these kickboxing fights. He's done three-man tournaments where you have to fight three fights back to back to back. Still, it's 3-3 rounds. So it's 9 minutes with breaks in between those fights. 12 rounds straight is the hardest sporting event possible. 12-round championship level is the hardest thing you could ever do in sports at all, ever. And Rico did damn good, man. But I think at the end of the day, once the gas tank started to deplete, and you saw him wilt, and he didn't have that continuous motion going and that physicality going, that's where Usyk was able to pick it up, find the spots, find the holes, and do the damage that he did.
Yeah, I know there's a lot. We'll get to Usyk in a second because there's a lot to unpack there. But I do want to give Verhoeven his just due. And if you go back and listen to our last episode, neither of us picked Rico to win. But the thing that I pride myself on this show, and I think you do too, is we look at it from both sides. And you talked about that rhythm, or the herky jerky style of Verhoeven, or when we watch a boxer fight someone that isn't a boxer, and it takes him a while to get used to it. We did talk about that on the last episode, and Usyk definitely did struggle with that. One of the judges had it 96-94 Rico, which would have been what we saw. Two of the judges had it even. Verhoeven landed 38% of his power shots. That's the third highest percentage ever on an Usyk opponent. That's crazy. Like, this guy, he came in here and he defied the odds. Like, we're sitting there watching. I'm driving to my brother's apartment and watching on my phone. I wasn't driving. I was in the passenger seat because I put out a video. It looked like I was driving. I was not driving and making a video at the same time. It was like one of those moments, like where are you type of moment that was starting to mount here. You know, it would have been bigger than Buster Douglas. You know, Buster Douglas was a boxer. He was a damn good boxer before
he stepped in the ring. And a damn good one, too. People forget that. He was a damn good fighter.
And Verhoeven's one professional boxing fight. He had an unbelievable kickboxing career. And there's a lot of that being talked about right now, like the revisionist history of it. You know, Usyk was never this great. You know, please don't ever put him in the same discussion. He's 39 years old. He still looked good at the end of the fight. Like, he still was able to find something late in this fight. Like, Verhoeven wasn't just, like, pushed around and the referees jumped in. He was down first and almost threw the ropes and was visibly hurt. And was when he spit out the mouthpiece, which...
And he was starting to get lumped up, too, because those shots were getting through.
Bro, he looked terrible, Verhoeven late. Like, physically, he was looking like he was getting, he was beat up. And the mouthpiece thing was on purpose. I mean, we don't know for sure, but
I don't know because he dropped the mouthpiece earlier. I think it was an ill-fitting mouthpiece, which is a real shame because he got hit with an uppercut a few rounds earlier and the mouthpiece came out.
You don't think it was to buy more time?
I think the corner, the way they put it in, maybe that little fumble, there was a little bit of that, which is fine. That's part of the sport. A good corner will do that. I don't know, dude. You get hit with an uppercut. You have an ill-fitting mouthpiece, it falls out. A mouthpiece should never fall out, guys. Mouthpieces are supposed to be hard to take out. You literally have to like get your fingernail under a well-fitting mouthpiece and pull it out of a guy's mouth. That's what a mouthpiece should be like. When he got hit with that uppercut, I believe it might have been the eighth round, or maybe a little early than that, and hit the floor. I was like, oh, it's not a good sign. So I don't know. I don't think it was on purpose. I think he got hit with another uppercut. It was a beautiful right uppercut, the lead hand from Usyk once again, Rico was fighting in that crouch. That uppercut was there all night, and Usyk was looking for it all night. He just couldn't find it until Rico slowed down a little.
They said he was fighting Jim Carrey, Me, Myself, and Irene. Well, the minute he stopped doing that is when he got in trouble.
Well, you know what's funny? People forget about this. Like older versions of fighters fought like that. You look at the Rocky Marcianos. They come in a crouch position. They fight out of that position. They keep that constant movement. He had a lot of that. And that's what I mean by making himself small. He's a big guy. Very, very tall. When he stands up straight, he looks considerably taller than when he fought. He's making himself small on the outside, when he was boxing. So that was part of it. And Usyk was looking for that uppercut all night long because it was there. You got a guy who's heavy over that front foot. The uppercuts are there. The issue was that Rico kept his head moving constantly. He was always moving that head, always rolling, slipping, sliding, and he was very switched on. Once he slowed down, he was getting a little tired later on. That was the difference. That's when Usyk was able to time him.
Well, let's get to the stoppage. You said before bad stoppage. I agree. Bad stoppage. Like everything I've was taught about boxing and I've heard about boxing from my dad, from you, from everyone, is that the referee is not supposed to take into account how much time is left in a round. We heard the clap.
That's a misconception. People really don't think that. Everyone says that. It's like, oh, the ref has to know what time. It doesn't matter. That's not his job.
No, the referee is supposed to. One of the referee's main jobs is to look out for the safety of the fighters. And if he feels like a fighter is getting pummeled and no longer defending himself, which Verhoeven was throwing back, he needs to stop the fight no matter what. 1 second left in the fight, 1 second left in a round, first round, whatever. Mark Lyson, who's had some questionable refereeing moments, decided he was going to stop that fight with what they say is 1 second left to go in the 11th round in a fight where it was basically even in one of the biggest boxing upsets potentially of all time. Once again, referee not supposed to think of those things, not so supposed to think of the stakes or where we are. He's supposed to just keep laser focused on Verhoeven. That being said, yeah, he almost went flying through the ropes. But like I said, when he got up, he looked okay, Verhoeven. Like he was throwing back in some of those exchanges. Then he comes in with the last 10 seconds with the Usyk, credit to him, onslaught. And they stopped the fight there with 2:59. But if you look at it, Chris, the bell rang, and there was 2 seconds after. That's when they stopped it. And Verhoeven, as of this morning, Sunday after the fight, is filing a protest or some type of whatever they stopped the fight after the round. This is where the controversy is. Like, that was a bad stoppage. It's plain and simple. Like, they should have went to the 12th, and we could have seen how this fight was going to play out. Was it going to play out with an emphatic knockout by Usyk? Was it going to play out with Verhoeven doing what he's done his entire career, is just still somehow standing and winning somehow? We were deprived of that moment. For what reason now? Was it because were they told, was the referee told, any moment close, stop the fight so Usyk can win? Because we want Usyk to keep winning. Is this a bad look for boxing? This is when you get into that territory of corruption, rigged, fixed, that you see from everyone on Twitter. You know, Dave Portnoy chimes in, a mainstream voice, boxing is rigged. Bill Simmons, boxing is like, this is boxing. Like that, you know, when it gets into that territory now, where we're like, ah, we got to have this conversation.
Well, it was the same thing that happened with Ngannou and Tyson Fury. Most people thought Ngannou won that fight, and then he ends up not getting it, you know, and then people look at it like, oh man, of course they're not gonna let this guy come to your hometown and take it, or to your home game or home sport and take it. So you get those questions. This is another reason why I don't like open scoring, because it adds more controversy. Because like you just said, was the ref thinking about the scores? Was the ref, he's not supposed to, of course. Was he thinking that there were, you know, that this was the opportunity to end this fight, and our guy, the boxer, can win. There's of course controversy. It's boxing. There's always drama around these fights and these kinds of fights, and especially with Usyk, because of the way Usyk fights, like he always has to come back and find a way at the end. He's that guy. He is the Jordan three-pointer. You know, like he is just that guy he's the buzzer beater, and he's still got that at 39, which he certainly looked 39, and was fighting like a 39-year-old. But he still has that desire to find that last shot and to hit the buzzer beater. The guy is special for sure, but. Yeah, there's going to be controversy swirling. I think this is ultimately, in hindsight, looking back, it's going to be a good thing for Rico, because there's going to be an argument now like, dude, you got robbed. Because if he goes out in the 12th round and then just gets stopped, we don't say that. We're like, hey, good job, man. You won more rounds than I expected. You know, he ended up getting you late, but hell of a job. But now it's like, yo, you should have won that fight. You were ahead. You know, I wasn't saying that. So, and Rico handed it with such grace and honor that it also was going to help him. So, in hindsight, this is really going to help Rico. On top of that, he's going to get another big fight and a huge payday. You know, you heard Turkey in the ring afterwards. He's like, I want a rematch.
We'll get to that too.
No one thought about that. Like, Rico's going to get another huge bag. It's great.
They bungled that post fight. They're very bad.
That was bad.
So bad at the post fights. They're great at staging these events.
Who's the ring guy with the hat and the shirt?
Reno.
Yeah, Reno, like with his back to the camera talking.
What was that, bro?
Oh man!
Like, you guys are putting so much money into these events, and that was an amazing event. Like, you pulled it off. Like it went mainstream. Like, the visuals of this. Like, what you wanted to accomplish was, look what we can do. Look at these visuals. Look at the pyramids in the back. They accomplished that. Everything they wanted to do with Times Square, and that being a big time blew up in their face, or we're going to put a fight at Alcatraz, we're going to do it, all those ended up not happening. They pulled it off with this.
Well, they did. The Times Square one was pretty similar.
Yeah, but they put up that wall and fans.
Yeah, it didn't look, that visual. Yeah.
The way they promoted it was, you can just walk up Times Square, bring your whole family. You're going to watch a great night of fights last second. I know the city did step in, put that wall up, whatever. Not talking about that. But they pulled it off. It was an amazing visuals, amazing event. It looked awesome. Everyone, even awesome. The hardest Turkey ring hater was like, holy shit, like this, props to them. This looks sick. Right. But then it comes after the fight, and how are you not on the same page? Like, Verhoeven standing there, Usyk standing there. Verhoeven hasn't even spoken yet. Reno comes in. What is back to the camera, like you said, and is talking about Kabayel Usyk. Turkey cuts off Reno and goes, wait, no. Rematch Verhoeven in Holland. But it's up to Usyk. Usyk's standing there, doesn't know what to say. I'll fight both of them, which is just like an Usyk thing.
Yeah.
So clearly they had this idea, like, Kabayel's going to come in no matter what. Like, Usyk's going to win. Kabayel's going to come in the ring. We're going to make this Kabayel-Usyk fight once and for all. They didn't adjust on the fly to, like, what if Verhoeven wins? Or what if, like, so there is a rematch. I do credit Turkey for coming in and saying, wait a second, we need
which also adds to the controversy, Dan, if you really think about it.
I don't necessarily want to see a rematch between Usyk and Verhoeven, at least not next. I think Kabayel Usyk next. Give us that fight. He's been the freaking mandatory for years now. I never liked this Verhoeven fight. I thought it was a circus fight. Even if Verhoeven fought better than we thought, it still was a circus fight. Don't want to see it again. But if I have to see it, let it be down the road a little bit. Let Verhoeven get another fight, either in MMA or boxing, wherever. Get your bag. Usyk, fight. Kabayel, better shape. Take it more serious. Whatever the case may be.
Go to Germany, fight in one of those stadiums. That's
yes, that's the fight next. I understand. Like, you want to see like a right wronged with the Verhoeven thing. I want the Usyk fight. Enough with these freaking sideshows that create these types of ridiculous moments. Like, let's go back to a little bit of normalty here, which the ring clearly wanted. Because they were trying to jam that Kabayel fight right in there after the shoehorn it in after the fight, even when it didn't really make sense according to the script.
Yeah, well, this is the script.
There's definitely a script. I don't care what you say. There's a script.
Yeah, this is not WWE. This is a sport. Guys actually do fight. We don't know what's going to happen. And it is the theater of the unexpected. That is what boxing is. And like you said, you know, dealing with that on the fly when they weren't expecting that was not handled properly.
Would you say there's more of a script now than ever, considering, like, we're getting these big fights and because of the money that's in it? But, like,
Well, no, we've seen this before. Turkey has done this many, many times. There are certain fights that he wants, and he tends to put, you know, that word that we use way too much, puts the cart before the horse. But this is a sport, and things happen. So, you know, this is a sport, and things happen. You know, it's not rigged. But yes, there is a timeline and a script written by the guys who the powers that be, and you've seen the veil get pulled away yesterday in that post-fight interview. Now you kind of look at this and you're like, and that's when the conspiracy minds will start putting their thoughts together on the Twitter box.
What makes more money, a Verhoeven rematch or Usyk fighting Kabayel in Germany or one of those big stadiums?
I think Kabayel. Listen, you're going to put a ton of people in there. I don't know. I mean, if you put it, I'm thinking about it, you put it in Holland, are they going to be able to do the numbers? Do they have a venue for that? Rico's super popular, of course, from his kickboxing, and it will bring over a lot of crossover eyes.
I think if you put it in a non-fake arena, like they built that thing yesterday for that event, I believe, and it was pretty full, but it wasn't like a traditional arena. I think Holland.
Well, even Sergio was saying, he was like, yeah, he was walking around Cairo and he was like, yeah, people aren't really that interested in this.
No.
This fight is for us. He's like, these people are here trying to make a living. But yeah, if you put it in a real arena, I don't know. I agree with you. I don't want to see the rematch. I understand, you know, the possible desire for that because of how Rico performed and how it ended was controversial. But yeah, let's go back to ranked fighters fighting for titles the way that it's supposed to be. And Kabayel has been waiting for a while. And Kabayel's good, man. It's a real fight. I think boxing people will be a lot more interested in that.
To Usyk. And we talked about this in the last episode, and we always mention it. Like, will he get old overnight? We didn't see anything in previous fights. No one saw anything in previous fights to suggest that. No one saw anything in previous fights or anything to suggest that he would come in not taking the fight serious or not training hard. We don't know if he didn't train hard. We can just go by our eyes.
I think he trained hard. I think he came in shape. I just think he's older. You know, the body, that's it, man.
He's 39.
Age is real. He's 39. He's 39.
He's 39, and this is what 39-year-old boxers look like. Most 39-year-old fighters aren't fighting still.
Especially at a high level. Especially,
give me a break. Like, and this is, I understand, like, there's people out there that just were looking for a guy's downfall, or there's fighters out there that believe he was too overrated, or there's boxing fans of a certain age that say, you know what, this heavyweight division is not as good as what I saw in the 90s. Stop putting Usyk in the same discussions as Holyfield, Bo, Lewis, Ali, whoever the case may be. Like, we're seeing that because I Usyk is great. Like, we've been over this numerous times. He went in there and beat everyone he was supposed to beat of this era. And he did it emphatically.
Twice.
He finally has his first... Is that a word?
No, twice. No, emphatically is good, but I'm saying he beat everybody twice.
Right. Like, the division wasn't great, but he went and said, you know what? I'll make up for it by beating them twice. So he has his first rough patch. He has his first hiccup. Literally. Like, this, has he ever looked that bad? Like, I'd have to go back and go back into his career. Maybe, like, the first Brutus fight?
And he didn't look bad. Brutus is just awesome. That was a great fight. I would say the Chisora fight. I think that was a fight where you can look back and be like...
His first real heavyweight test.
Yeah, Usyk struggled, and Chisora brought a little bit of the game plan out that I'm sure Rico watched. Now, a big man who's aggressive can give him issues, because it's harder to time a guy who's mauling like that. And Chisora is a great mauler. He's really good at that. He's big, he's strong, and he can punch.
I think that's the way to beat Usyk, dude.
Yeah. Rico's not a puncher the way that Chisora is. But like I said, he fought like a little man trying to score points on the outside and a big man on the inside. And I think that was a really smart tactic. Rico knows what he is and he knows what he's not. He's not a one punch guy. He knows that. He didn't fight like that. He didn't fight like a big man on the outside trying to land a big killer right hand. He wasn't Lennox Lewis out there. He was Rico Verhoeven, and he made it work. And that's, again, tactically such a brilliant move. But also, when you make a strategy, being able to execute the strategy, Rico did. Rico is that kind of guy. Rico's a real champion. He's been doing this a long time. So his ability to execute the strategy against possibly stylistically the most difficult heavyweight we've ever seen, super, super impressive. I mean, we're gonna glaze Rico all day today. I can't help it.
It's right. I mean, you got to give the guy his props. I mean, he won over so many fans. He can go He was supposed to fight Ngannou, not supposed to, but he was very close to doing the MMA event with Ngannou. He was supposed to fight Joshua.
And I heard the Joshua fight was like a done deal.
It. Joshua got the accident and then it postponed everything. Remember when you said, hey, maybe if it was Joshua, I would give Verhoeven more of a shot.
Oh, I got flamed online for that one, boy. Jeez.
Verhoeven versus Joshua right now? How are you looking at that fight?
Verhoeven's legit. My only and I said there was no chance Rico wins, and I still kind of believe that. I know he overperformed and he did really well, but you know the ending happened kind of the way that it was meant to be. But except for the stoppage, obviously. But Rico is that level of guy. He's an athlete. He's a champion. Just like I was saying that. Like, and my whole point was like, if it wasn't Usyk, the most difficult style, you know, heavyweight we've ever seen, I actually give Rico a shot to beat some of these top heavyweights because he is that good. And we saw that. He actually is.
So if it is Usyk versus Caballero next, with Usyk that we just saw, you know, a little bit of a decline, footwork decline in a lot of different areas, Caballero can maul. Caballero can get on the inside and hammer to the body.
Big, strong guy.
I got to see that fight.
Yeah, that's the fight. That's the next fight. And you and I have been talking about that for months. I like Caballero. I really like Caballero. He's a good body puncher. He's aggressive. He's a good finisher. He's obviously super popular in Germany. That's the fight to be next. And he's earned his spot. He deserves to be there. He's got really, really good wins.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. This is all going to play out. Verhoeven can go to MMA and fight on Netflix and the MVP against Ngannou. Ngannou already quote tweeted Jake Paul suggesting that he can stay in boxing.
I'd love to see Ngannou and Rico box.
That's a scenario that could be an MVP. The options are there for Rico. His phone's going to be ringing for many different opportunities. Peter Fury's phone's going to be ringing for many different opportunities. Coaching, training. Mm-hmm. I saw a lot of things like if Tyson Fury kept Peter Fury instead of his dad, who knows great game plan. Awesome stuff from Verhoeven. Usyk still showed that he's got that game-changing power late, and he's a 39-year-old man. So he's not invincible. Alexander Usyk.
He never was, though. He never was invincible because I've been saying this about him forever. Like, I've seen him struggle in every weight class. I've seen him struggle in the amateurs. I've seen him struggle in the cruiserweight. I've seen him struggle early in his heavyweight. That's just the way he is. The guy is so good at operating on the brink of failure, but always winning, always getting over the hump, man. He's an incredible athlete. He should be studied psychologically for what an athlete who operates the way he does time and time again. Amazing.
One last thing. Anyone that, like, I'm seeing a lot of this too. Like, you guys need this crazy ever thinking that he could compete or be with, like, an Ali or an all-time great. I've had this discussion with Najee on the show. He's pumping his chest out today big time because he has said that Usyk is overrated, which I don't believe in. I mean, there's no doubt that Usyk would have lined up good with some guys from the 60s, 70s, and 80s because they weren't that big, the heavyweights back then, and just skill-wise. But he was never like an all-time great. Like, he's never in that discussion. He's the best of this era, which puts him in the room with some of the other guys. That's just how it is. And you can't use that last fight at age 39 against him. At least I don't think.
Yeah, you can't put his greatness into question because of a 39-year-old fight against a guy who brought an awkward and good game plan. And
people want to do that though. They want to erase everything.
Of course they will. Okay, it's what boxing is always. What have you done for me lately? God, and then he goes out, and if he goes out there in his next fight and he handles Caballero, which I still think he will, you know, then it's going to be like, oh, well, there it is. We're back. Usyk's back. He just had a bad night.
Yeah, so I hope that's the case. I hope Caballero's next. We see who's the better man there. Verhoeven gets another crazy bag, which he deserves.
He'll probably get two.
Whatever the case may be for Verhoeven. And then you want to make that fight again, it's still there. People will still remember the heat that is here today. Rest of the card, Frank Sanchez ices Richard Torres in two rounds, knocks him out cold. Sanchez is now the IBF mandatory to Usyk.
Sanchez, a guy who was bested by Caballero, by the way. I mentioned he has good wins on there. Sanchez looked good. He had a very good game plan. And I think we had a little bit of an exposed moment for Torres. You know, he's got that frenetic, herky-jerky style, and he comes in from that southpaw stance. But I never noticed how much he squares up. He falls forward with that back foot and gets into square position, which Sanchez did his homework. He was just waiting with the right hand all night long. Every time, if you watch the fight back, every time Torres threw his left, Sanchez came over the top with his right. Landed a good one in the first round over the top. And then again, when I was mentioning the squaring up, Torres, right before the finish, he throws a left hook and his left foot falls to the inside, squares up and gets clipped with that shot that hit on the weird side of the head. And those can really rock you. Obviously, they did. But it was the difference was Sanchez did not bust position. Torres fights guys like he shot out of a cannon. He backs guys up. He gets guys, what is going on with this head movement? And then they're overwhelmed. Sanchez stayed cool, calm, collect the whole time. He had a game plan. He's like, all right, when you throw that left hand, I'm going to throw my right hand. And then if you dip that way, I'm gonna throw that right hand. But if you watch his feet, very good base. And we talked about his knee surgeries. I didn't see any of that. His legs looked good. He looked good. No brace. His legs looked strong. His stance was great. Never busted position. Was just waiting with that right hand. And the guy can punch. I mean, so, great game plan. Good execution by Sanchez. But also, a lot of mistakes made by Torres there. All those things I mentioned.
Yeah. Revisionist history here.
Knocked out before. Jalolov knocked him out in the amateurs.
Iced him. Sanchez, it wasn't even that clean of a shot to the naked eye. It was like top of the head, grazing. On the chin.
It's a weird shot because it's like a right hand that hits on this side of the head that wouldn't really be that way. It's a looping compact shot. Those kind of shots, it's funny. There's certain points where you get hit where they cause knockouts or guys to get hurt. Sometimes it's not even so much like you're getting hit on the chin where your head will spin. Sometimes it's that your neck will get hit and it drives in. If you notice where he was down and it was a driving shot that went into his neck. That can shut you off too. And obviously it did.
He got shut off indeed. And, it was like, is this too much too soon for Torres? Top Rank would never put him in here with someone they don't think he can beat. All that was the discussion beforehand. I thought Torres was going to win.
I did too. But also we talked more basing it on the knee of Sanchez because Sanchez is very good. But when you got a guy who's 33 and has had multiple knee surgeries and the fight gets pushed off.
That's what I mean, bro.
It's hard not to be like, okay, well, Torres should be the favorite, which Vegas had him as well.
Vegas had him as a big favorite.
Yep.
Minus 430, Torres, heading into this fight. And you can only go based on what the last things you've seen in the ring. And the last thing we've seen
out of the ring when it comes to surgery.
Exactly. Surgery, bad knee, is he 33? Is he older? Caviel beat him. Torres ascending, also hasn't fought anyone of Sanchez's ilk. Sanchez did it. Knocked him out emphatically. Is now the IBF mandatory to Usyk. And I don't think we're going to see Sanchez Usyk anytime soon. So that's a whole ball of yarn that I don't really care to get into. But it was an awesome knockout. Shocking early on in the card, which there was a few shocking early knockouts, which made this one of the longest shows of the year.
Part of the reason was that, because that was not expected. I thought that was going to be a good fight. I thought we were going to get rounds. But, when you get a shocker like that, it's like, oof, that's tough. Because I didn't expect much from the other fights either. Shiraz, I didn't expect, that fight to go very long. And I'm sure people were banking on that too. Giasov and Catterall, you expected that to go the distance and go rounds. But I thought this one was going to go rounds too, and it did not.
I don't understand. Like, I used to get the HBO days of a Phil and telling a fighter when he's coming in the ring, network obligations. We have to start at this time. We have to get off the air at this time. I thought when we entered the streaming world, there wasn't going to be any more of that. And I think I was excited for that when DAZN came into boxing. It's like, oh, wow. No, like, local news after the fight or no, like, we got to get
no time. There's no time constraints. We don't have to be in or out.
There's no movie on HBO that we have to be off the air before. So I was like, wow, this is great. We're going to get streamed.
Remember that when Saturday Night HBO would release the new release into the catalog?
That was a big night. Saturday night, 8 p.m. or afterwards was a big movie. I thought that was going to be gone. I thought that was gone. It's getting worse. It's getting, I don't know if they're telling the fighters, this is the time you're starting. I think it's that. Because I've been around enough these MVP shows and big time fights now where I know
you're
the arrivals.
You're walking at 8:15.
Yes, and I know the arrival thing. I get the schedule. Like, Ronda Rousey's car is picking her up at this time, and it's not changing. And this is when she's getting to the room. This is when she's going to walk, no matter what. So then it's up to the production team to figure out how they're going to keep everyone entertained and ready for the fight. I don't know. There's got to be some type of middle ground here, because that was one of the worst viewing experiences. And it was just like pronounced, because there was two really long fills. I don't know if they were an hour, but they were definitely over a half hour, where you're going back from Ade, who's a great guy and a great broadcaster, but he's put in a really bad spot, having asked these ridiculous questions. Yeah, and we're going to college. We're going, like, it was just, it was crazy, man. It was crazy. Even Jake Paul tweeting about it. Like, but MVP had a lot, and their Netflix card had some big fills too. It's just not realistic. What other sport does this? Like, it was almost a 5-6 hour card, and the Sanchez fight was over in two rounds. Hamza Shiraz blitzes Bejic in two rounds, so that's four rounds on the undercard, and then the 12 with Catterall. I don't know, man. Like, it was a really, really tough kind of watch. I know we're kind of complaining a little bit here, but I want it to be great. Like, I want it to be a good viewing experience. I don't want anything during a fight night where fans are, like, deterred from watching again.
Well, I didn't watch it live because I was, like I said, I was on the mic working fights. But so I don't know how the experience was of watching this card.
Not good. But
I like cards that move fast. If there's a knockout, all right, bring out the next fight. Let's get it going and be ready. Because I remember when I was fighting on local circuits before TV, that's how they operate. If the fight ends, you're going. There is no walk time. We got fans who bought tickets to be here, and that's how we make our money. We're not on TV. It's a dark show, and we just got to keep the people who are in here, you know, entertained. So they bring the fights out. I remember, you know, being wrapped, you know, just getting finished wrapped, and they're like, all right, that was a first round knockout. You got to get out there. No warm up. All right, glove gets on, and we're walking to the ring.
That
happened to me in my pro debut in boxing. Yes. Actually, I was in the back. My hands weren't wrapped. And my coach tied my glove way too tight. My right hand was completely asleep before the first round, before the first round started in my pro debut in boxing, because of that being rushing. So yeah, that's the worst case the other way. No, we don't want that. But I think with a show like this, where you've got all this production value and you got a big lead up, you can make video segments that you can put in to keep people at home entertained. The people that are there, it's kind of, you kind of got to
sit
there.
They did that, Chris. They did a standing segment with the heads, and then they went to a video.
Yeah, but it's too much. You should have it set. And in worst case scenario, and I've seen production sheets on how they do this. They have fill. They have things to interject. But you can still keep the fights moving. Like, you have a set time. Okay, if that was a first round knockout, cool. We have a 5-minute video. We're going to show the 5-minute video. We're going to talk for 5 minutes, and then they're in the ring.
What about another fight? What about a swing bout? I love swing bouts.
Swing bouts, that's like dude, they don't do those anymore. I argue
just
with...
Just action. Like, even if it's like a prospect, even if it's like a squash match, just anything.
Yeah, I don't understand. I think when you have such a produced card like this, where it's like, it's set. This is this guy, this is the running order. They don't like to throw in a fight like that, but I agree. I think bring back swing bouts. Yeah. For people who don't know what a swing bout is, you got guys that are available to fight. They don't know if they're going to be just thrown in at any point, or they're going to be the back end of the show, on the ass end of the show when the lights go off. Basically,
that's nuts.
That sucks, because then those guys you got to be wrapped the
biggest
whole time
fight ever. Yeah,
you're sitting there wrapped in the back, like, I don't know what I'm going to fight. Like, it's a very difficult place to be in. But also, you get opportunities to get on TV when you weren't supposed to be on TV. So there is a benefit.
Bring back swing bouts. Benavidez, PBC does them. The Benavidez fight ended against Zerto, and the crowd was electrified and were clearing out. And then the ring announcer was like, we got one more fight. And here comes a kid making his debut. I don't think, like, 15 minutes is, I think there's a sweet spot. Like, you don't want to rush the fighters, but you also don't want to wait an hour, because there's got to be something in the middle. The reason why there was such a big fill was because Hamza Shiraz blitzed Alan Bejic in two rounds. He wins the WBO title. Bejic, that was one of the worst title challengers ever.
This is one of the major arguments for governing bodies and these titles. How do you sanction this guy for a world title fight? And it's a real shame.
The first choice.
Because Hamza Shiraz is super legit and deserves to be a world champion. But you got to... he deserves to win it in a way that you feel proud about it. That was a sparring session. They look like they picked that guy.
I don't think he was proud either.
No, he just walked the guy down and beat him up. Like there was nothing to write home about. Like winning your title, man, is such a moment. You only get your first title. You only get one. You only get one first title. And that moment, dude, and that was taken from Shiraz because of the opposition in front of him. Listen, if he was fighting a stud and knocks him out in the first round, that's awesome. That happens. That wasn't this. They look like they picked this guy out of like a Equinox group class. I'm like, all right, you're getting in there. You're fighting for a world title against one of the baddest guys around.
They went down the list. This wasn't the WBO's top guy, but he was in the top five. And this is not – I like the WBO, but this was a ringing endorsement for what Zuffa's trying to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. And it wasn't – Shiraz was supposed to fight Munguia. He was supposed to fight Resendez. He was supposed to do a bunch of different things. Supposed to fight a different opponent for the WBO. They go down the list to the next contender that's available and willing, and that was Bejic, who's 39 years old, unbeaten, but untested, unproved.
So don't make it a title fight. Sorry, it's not a title fight.
But they...
It's not a worthy opponent.
The positive to come out of it is that Shiraz did what he's supposed to do. He's now the champion. He's one of the top guys at 168, belt or no belt. There's a lot of different things. He can wait for Canelo... Canelo is fighting in Billy in September, so that would be next May. He can fight Munguia, which would be a unification bout and good fight. Or there's that third option of fighting a voluntary defense, another guy at 168 for Shiraz.
I think put him and Munguia together on the undercard of Canelo and...
versus the world?
Yeah. I mean, especially if you're trying to set up, which it seems like... Turkey wants, he really wants Shiraz and Canelo. Put him on the same card. Old school. Put him on the same card. A double feature. Yeah, Canelo is the main event. We got a good co-main event that we can put them both in the ring afterwards. Again, we're assuming Canelo wins the fight, which is not a foregone conclusion by any means. But also, if it's Mbili and Billy Shiraz next, why not? Put him on the card.
Yeah, I agree there. Because I don't think Canelo's like a lock to beat Mbili. He's going to be the favorite. We've seen this happen. I think of Caleb Plant when he had the IBF title and Canelo was going for undisputed, and he sat out for a really long time. He ultimately cashed in his lottery ticket, which was a fight with Canelo, but he waited a long time. Hopefully that's not the case for Shiraz. I don't think it will be, but I know Turkey wants Shiraz Canelo. I don't think he's going to sit out for a year because Canelo has a schedule. We know what his schedule is. It's September or May. Like they did flirt with, oh, he's going to fight in February as well, in addition, under this new deal. That's not happening. So Canelo's fighting in Billy in September, and then he's going to fight again in May, and that's the end of his deal, the first deal, with Turkey and all of them. So I hope it's Shiraz Munguia. That's an awesome fight. I think that's top four guys fighting, duking it out, Canelo and Billy. It's a nice little tournament going on here at 168. But Shiraz looked awesome. Bejic, thank you for your time.
Catterall,
back to the drawing board for him. Catterall looked awesome. Jack Catterall dropped GSF early, looked really sharp, becomes the regular WBA champ because on Friday the WBA elevated Rolly to super WBO champ. Once again, Hoofa guys are laughing because... between the WBO and now the WBA doing this, they elevated Rolly. They pretty much elevated Rolly for avoiding GSF, for avoiding his mandatory. What?
I can't make any sense of this. Rolly has been a champion, and he hasn't fought in over a year.
But you know what I mean? They put him in a better spot for not fulfilling his mandatory. And he should have fought GSF. I think he could have beat him.
Yeah, no, I think so. And when you mentioned that Catterall looked awesome. Catterall did what Catterall does. Catterall looked like Catterall. Catterall is one of the most consistent operators in the game. He's very good. He's not great. He's very good. Super solid. Good technical fighter. Physically strong. Great gas tank. Knows how to fight. Knows what he is. Knows what he isn't. Good performance. Very good. Giasov, to me, looked like a guy who's been waiting too long for his shot. He looked flat. Giasov, good fighter, mind you, in the past, did not look good. He used to have really good feet. He was so flat-footed. And the style matchup without those feet, because he throws those looping right hands. He almost never throws a straight right hand. He loops that thing. It's a good shot. He actually rocked Catterall with it in the very first round. He hit him with the right hand and then got dropped moments later. But when you got two guys like that, Catterall throws straight punches. He's got no fat on that left hand. He gets his head offline. Boom, boom. When you got a guy with a looping shot, you're going to beat him every time. If you're not on that pendulum swing, which Gyasov used to have, he was flat-footed and just looking to load up with the right hand. Catterall was beating him to the punch all night long. Hurt him multiple times just by good technique. Straight fundamentals. Lined him up. Straight right hand. It's going to beat the looping shot. Good win for Catterall. Cat is in a really good place, man. He's rattled off three good wins in a row. He's operating very consistently, which is big. So I'm happy for him. He seems like a good dude too. So, and Gyasov, I don't think we're ever seeing that guy again, bud. he was waiting around for a long time and it might've been waiting too long. He might be overdone.
Once again, revisionist history here, but Rolly's been out of the ring for over a year.
May of last year.
And was he avoiding Gyasov because he didn't think he could beat him? Was the PBC not doing it because it wasn't going to make any money? They couldn't put Rolly on one of these cards? Just like they put Catterall on this card? Like, Rolly could have gotten this fight against Gyasov any time in the last 12 months, even before that, and probably would have won it because Gyasov was this boogeyman. And he's got no one to blame but himself, Rolly, because he's, I'm going to retire. This boxing game sucks. He ran away from his mandatory that he could have beat. Take care of him, and then you would have been in a way better spot now. I don't know. Does he fight Catterall? Does Haney fight Catterall, which has been discussed numerous times?
I can see Haney and Catterall. I wouldn't mind seeing Rolly and Catterall. Catterall might get him. Like I said, Catterall is super fundamental, and he's consistent. And one thing about Rolly is, as good as he is at times, he's not consistent. And I think it's a real fight.
But what are these guys looking for? Like something like Roy? Looking for the biggest fight possible, or are you trying to get in the ring? Like defend your title?
I think Roly's just looking for the biggest fights possible. Like he sees himself at a certain level.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to take a fight like a GSL. Absolutely. And listen, he's been there. He's been to the top, and he's upset the apple cart. But yeah, it gets to a point where if you're waiting too long, man, like GSL, if you're waiting too long, you get stale. And it wasn't even really GSL's fault that he was waiting, although he could have pushed harder for those mandatories, I believe. Taking step-aside money is a problem. You see it time and time again.
It's a gift and a curse because you make.
What are we doing this for? Are we doing this for titles? Or are we doing this just for money? Guess what? The title, get a title, get your defenses, you'll make money. Yeah.
Guys are trying to do both. Friday night, you were in San Jose, which is kind of funny because you went in and you went out. You sniped in, you sniped out. You called the fight on DAZN. Didn't get a ton of whatever. It was a good fight. Amari Jones.
Stud.
He wins. What can you tell us about this guy? Because middleweight has not been good division, but he's now inching closer to title contention.
I was watching him all week, you know, getting ready for the fight. Good athlete, former football player, good amateur pedigree, super sharp, good size to the weight class. He's tall. He's long. I was so impressed with him, seeing him live. This kid has ice in his veins. Cold-blooded, calculated, clinical. And he's fighting a former world champion. Gualtieri was never that guy, right? He won a title. He got blasted out by Janabek. But he's had a couple good wins. Regardless, he's a difficult guy to deal with. He's got a little herky-jerky. He's awkward. Jones had him dead to rights almost immediately. It was very impressive. He gets in the corner and the coaches were like, Virgil Hunter is a coach, which also tells you a lot about what level Amari Jones is at. Because Virgil, at this stage of his career, only works with you if you are the goods. And guess what? Amari Jones is the goods. This was his coming out party. Tough weekend. You get lost in the in the muddle of it all. But people who were paying attention, this kid's the goods. And he went out there. Virgil was great in between the first round. He's like, or maybe it wasn't Virgil saying it. It might have been his father. But somebody in the corner was like, all right, he showed you all you got. All he's got. Get out there and handle business. That's exactly what he did. Dominant performance. Nice knockout. Just looked worlds better than Gualtieri, who's a former world champion. So the level's there. This kid is here to stay.
Yeah, and he's promoted by Oscar and Golden Boy. And
he sells tickets too, by the way. He's very popular. Oh, there was a crowd.
Nice. It's great. It's music to my ears. We need more young stars, and especially middleweights.
Yeah.
Good. Oscar did an interview with Chris Mannix and did not confirm Ryan Garcia versus Conor Benn.
Yeah, I'm hearing that's not a done deal. I heard it was a done deal. I heard it was done. And I was talking to Mannix about it. Mannix said, I heard the same thing. He goes, but, oh man, Like, he's like, that's why he said, he was like, I'm going to press Oscar. I'm not going to let him filibust and dance around said. It. Yeah. He's like, I'm going to ask him live for real. And he did. He kept pushing it. But Oscar is savvy, very media savvy, and doesn't have a direct answer for it. So, yeah, that fight is certainly now, in, once again, back in question.
That's what I said from the start. And Ryan, you want to say I don't know shit respectfully? Like, we've seen this from you. Like, he gets excited. He went on Jimmy Fallon show. He wasn't just going to go on there and just, you know, look pretty and shadow box and do all that.
And show off his nice shiny belt.
Right. He was going to say something like that. And I hope it happens. I really do.
Yeah,
I like too. Ryan versus Connor. I like the fight. But I just, there's so many things out there. There's so many politics and Zuffa and, you know, Oscar said it has to happen on the zone.
Because there was
a rumor out there that it was maybe on Netflix. He hammered that part down. He didn't say, yes, this fight's happening. He does what he usually does, Oscar. He's not so fast. I'm in charge. I choose your next fight, Ryan. I'm your promoter. We've done this song and dance so many damn times. That's why I was skeptical at first. Like, is it money? Is it because of the Zuffa stuff? It's like we talked about the last episode with the belts and all that stuff. I think it's a lot of everything.
It's also just Ryan. I mean, this is always how Ryan. I'm not saying it's Ryan's fault, but I'm just saying everything around Ryan. It's always swirling. It's always a storm. Nothing's ever easy because he is such a big star, and now he's a champion. It's probably you would think it'd get easier. It's not. It's gonna get harder to narrow this stuff down.
Remember, he's gonna fight Pacquiao.
Yeah, dude. You know, I'm telling you right now. People don't understand this. Like, we always like complain, like, oh, why aren't these fighters busier? Dude, negotiating these fights takes months. It's in. It's out. It's really, really difficult. It's the worst part of the sport. The worst part of this sport happens in boardrooms and on phone calls and in emails. The ring is the best part, obviously. But yeah, there's a lot of hoops to jump through in order to get to a world title fight.
Well, it's now May 24th, and there's, like, outside of the Boots Zayas fight, which I cannot wait for, we're like a month away from that. Like, Devin Haney, no summer blockbuster fight. Rolly Romero, no summer blockbuster fight. Ryan Garcia, not looking like it's May. Like, you have to announce these fights now.
Yeah, they have to be at the finish line. Usually it's 2 months at least.
So there's going to be nothing in June and July and probably August for some of these. Like, Teofimo, nothing. Shakur. Any rumors with Shakur? What the frig?
Yeah, I haven't heard anything with Shakur. Devin, I've heard some rumblings. He might be going the Zuffa route just because there's not, like, a ton of options.
But you know what I mean? Like, I hear all that stuff too, but, like, we're in June.
Yeah, nothing's getting done. Pen is not going to paper, and that's...
So what's happening after Boots Zayas in terms of marquee fights in this sport?
We go on vacation?
I'm fine with that. July is looking pretty open for me. We'll see. Something that always... The thing with boxing is something... It always happens. Like, these guys will end up fighting. If it's the fall, there's going to be back-to-back-to-back weekends, same night sometimes. So we will get these fights. Just frustrating.
That's also a good thing about having, you know, Turkey in the game, because he will make things out, and he loves surprises. He loves news. It could come out of nowhere at any time, which
could be frustrating for us as
And he pushes fights through that he really wants.
We don't know who's in the circle of trust anymore. Haney was in Egypt. That's nothing. Last thing, it was pretty cool seeing all the fighters. The one thing I'm jealous about with the UFC is, like, they're very good since they're an organization, bringing all their fighters together.
Yeah.
Showing them off all at once at events, like, this is our roster, this is our stars. Boxing never had that because it's been so fragmented, different promoters, different networks. The one cool thing about the ring and Turkey and all that is, like, they get them all together. And then you see that video of them in front of the pyramids?
Yep.
It was like Usyk, Joshua, Crawford, Canelo, all of them. It looked
ringside. Cool. How about Triple G sitting next to Canelo chopping it up? That was cool. Awesome. Like, that was really
cool. Let's show off our current and past stars.
Triple G looks so retired and happy.
Oh, he's,
You know, I see him down here. He lives down by me in Boca.
That's
so
awesome.
I've seen him. We've crossed each other running before. I'm running with a buddy of mine downtown Boca by the water, and I'm talking to my friend who's kind of blocking me from seeing the guy who's coming. And, like, the very last second, I was like, I'm looking back and I'm like, that looked like Triple G, right? So then we go off on our long run. It was a long run. It was like a 10 miler that day. So, like, you know, a good hour and a half later, coming back the same trail, and then Triple G. I'm like, I can see him ahead of him. He's coming. I'm like, oh, and I just go, Gennady. Kennedy. And he's like, and he stops and he looks for me a second. Then he goes, oh, hey, Chris. And we're just chatting it up, you know, by the beach, both of us shirtless,
retired,
running, sweating, champs. Two former champs, still staying in shape. And I was like, hey, you look good. He's like, oh, no, you look good.
You can make heavyweight now. There might not be any big fights this summer, Chris, but the Knicks, baby. The Knicks are going to the NBA Finals. We think they're up 3-0 when we record this. It's going to be a New York Knicks summer at MSG. I can't believe it. I can't believe it.
Bro, we got a good Knicks team. How amazing is that? I got to break out my jersey with my name on it. Got to break that out.
You have to wear that next episode. They're on an unbelievable run.
I wanted to wear it today, but we just had so much news with the Rico fight. So they got to win this next one, and then next show I'll have it on.
NBA Finals, the New York Knicks. Hell is freezing over. I can't believe it. The last time they were in the NBA Finals was 1999. I was 12 Yikes. Years old. They had Ewing. I watched it. Well.
Oh, Ewing, dude. Those are the days, man.
Yeah. I got this crazy Spurs bet with my buddy. It's not looking good. We put the future in bet before the season. Spurs to win it all, $1,000 to win $41,000.
That's insane.
It reached its highest cash out. When the Spurs won game one, it reached, I think, 13,000.
Mm.
And me and my buddy were like, should we cash out, take the 13,000, go buy Knicks finals tickets, and then go to like Montauk or something? And he's like, no, let's keep riding it. Now I've lost two in a row of the Spurs. It's down to like 6,000 to cash out. Still pretty good.
It's still pretty good. Investment on $1,000. That's not bad.
Not bad. Not bad. All right. We'll see you guys later in the week. We'll break down some more hijinks. Let's go Knicks. Let's go boxing. Keep your hands up at all times. Protect yourself at all times. Stay out of those DMs. We're out.